Hello, my name is Noel Bell, and I'm a psychotherapist based in London. And this interview in my podcast series today is with Laura Heck, all the way from Salt Lake City in Utah. Laura is a licensed marriage and family therapist in private practice and a certified Gottman therapist in private practice in Salt Lake City, Utah, working exclusively with couples. She is co-founder of For Better, an action-driven online coaching tool for couples that teaches the science of successful relationships through straight talking and exercises. So, Laura, good afternoon from me, where I am in my time zone. And I think it's good morning to you.
It is. It's bright and early. I have my morning sun. You have your afternoon sun coming through the windows.
So let's chat, Laura, about your work. I've heard, I got in touch with you, I've heard a few of your online presentations, which I've got a lot from. So before we go on to specifically talk about the couples work, do you want to just tell us a little about your sort of, I guess, your influences from a counseling and psychotherapy point of view?
So I practice what's called Gottman Method couples therapy, and I work exclusively with couples. I found out very early on that I didn't want to work with individuals. There was something about the interaction between partners that was so fascinating to me. And I just dove straight into my training with John and Julie Gottman in Seattle, Washington, and I never looked back. My background and sort of my influences is a pretty eclectic, I would say, in that I do a lot of cognitive, I do a lot of behavioral therapy, a lot of emotionally focused therapy, though I haven't been trained by Susan Johnson exclusively. There's some psychodynamic, and I would say, a little bit of narrative. So it's pretty eclectic in my influences, for sure.
So essentially, would you describe yourself as a integrative practitioner?
I would say so. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
Yeah. It's always interesting. I don't know whether, do you get clients asking you how you work?
I don't. Most couples that come to me are pretty in pain, and there's not a lot of research. A lot of times it's a knee-jerk reaction. I don't know about you, but most of the couples that come to see me are either making their phone calls or scheduling their appointments online on like a Friday night at 1 o'clock in the morning. It's after a big blow up. It's after something massive has happened. And oftentimes it doesn't happen by way of intensive research. I think what we do is sort of a mystery to most people. Luckily, John Gottman and Julie Gottman have received quite a bit of layman attention, I would say, people out of the field that know of their work, because it's pretty sexy in the way that John has been able to predict divorce with 90 to 94% accuracy. That's interesting to the general public, which then all of a sudden they're saying, well, who is this John Gottman guy? But no, most people don't ask me what my approach is. They just want to know if I'm a couples therapist and if I'm good. That's pretty much it.
And I thought everyone in the sort of field knew about Dr. John Gottman, but it's not always the case, actually. So how did you get involved with the Gottman Institute?
I was a hungry, desperate, driven grad student. That's really how it happened. I received some of the best advice from the local chapter. It's called the Washington Association for Marriage and Family Therapists. And I served on the board there. But before I served on the board, I was a student in grad school. And the advice that I had received was basically, if you have a direction, if you have a natural interest, you move in that direction, you do not get derailed. And it's really easy to come out of grad school and get derailed because you are starving and you have to pay off some student loan bills and you're just willing to take any job that'll have you. And it came down to the point where my husband and I were short selling our house, and I had been doing grad school and just sort of living on student loans for too long. And I was desperate for a job. And I was about ready to take this marketing position with like a plumbing company. I mean, it was so out of left field just to pay the bills. Mm-hmm. And instead I contacted the Gottman Institute and I said, you're my idol. You are the person that I read about in every text. You are somebody who's sourced by every other person. I mean, everybody just sort of feeds off of the same body of research and just puts it into their own words. And I said, can I have a job? And they said, no, thank you. We don't have any job offerings. And I said, that's fine. I'll come work for you for free. And that's what I did. And I just sort of got my foot in the door. And that was what I wanted to do, is I just wanted to be surrounded by the best of the best. And started as an intern, their very first intern that they ever had. And I think shortly after that, they liked me enough to pay me some money to keep me around and put me in an actual position. So that's how I got my start with the Institute.
So there was a lot of proactive energy on your part.
Absolutely. I think that free labor is hard to deny. And if you can set your goals very high and shoot for the stars, I mean, the next person I'd probably track down would be Susan Johnson and say, you know, put me on your payroll. And she would say, nah, we're okay. That's fine. I don't need to be paid. Let me soak up by osmosis all of your energy and your wisdom.
And there was no one called Harvey answering the phone when you got in touch.
No, nobody. No, that's right.
And I suppose it's not that it doesn't occur even in our field.
It
misuse
does.
Of power.
Yeah, it absolutely does. And, you know, I've been in the, like I said, you know, I was part of the Institute, and there's been cases where you have therapists that you hope that they operate under the best of intentions, but there are cases that I've heard of that are misused and licenses are revoked, and you just want to stay as ethical as possible.
Mm-hmm. So what is it, Laura, that particularly draws you then to the client, the couple client work rather than the individual one-to-one?
Well, gosh. Okay, so there's a couple of things. I'll speak really candidly because oftentimes therapists, they don't get to say what they really want to say, but it's just two therapists talking to each other, right?
That's right. And no one's listening.
Yet. Yeah, nobody's listening. First of all, I think that it's really human. And something that I truly believe is that individuals are not meant to be individual on this planet. We are intended to connect with one another. It's the biggest driving force that we have. And I really, truly believe that when we leave our parents, so that initial first interaction that we have is going to be the most important. And then we go out into the world and we're searching for our person. And when we find them, that person can help heal you. That person can help make you feel safe. You can create a beautiful little culture around you. And I think it's really unfortunate when we do it wrong and we end up hurting one another and hurting ourselves in the process. So I was really driven to couples work in that I think that we have a lot of really well-intended people doing bad behaviors with each other. And I'd love to be able to help teach and guide them based on research of what is the best way to do relationships. How can we be our best selves and show up? So that's one piece. The other piece is you can't make this stuff up. Couples work is better than any reality television show you could ever subscribe to. I think human beings are incredibly fascinating, and I love coming to work every day and hearing the stories and understanding that we are all so very unique and at the same time so much the same. So that's why I do what I do.
And it's interesting, isn't it? The drama that they're in gets, you know, reenacted in front of you often.
It does. And for me, it's really fascinating to be able to look at people and not have known them prior and only taking the bits of information that they choose to share with me about their story, about their background, and wonder, why is it that when he does this, you interact or you react in this way? Well, it turns out that she had a massive abuse history and her childhood was plagued with abandonment and when he says this one thing, it triggers her. I mean, it's just fascinating to mm-hmm. see how human beings behave. So I just love it. I feel like a detective oftentimes.
But I remember like a colleague saying, we're kind of like Columbo in a way. We're looking for where are the inconsistencies? Mm-hmm. We're reality testing mm-hmm. in some respects. And we're providing access to someone's blind spots, maybe.
Yes, absolutely we are. Yeah. And that's probably something I think that makes me a little bit different from other therapists is that I don't think you can necessarily be as gentle as you would in individual work. I'm just not a gentle human being. I call it as I see it. And in couples work, you almost have to be more directive and you have to be able to be more of a mirror and point out these blind spots in more of a direct way than you would if you were working with individuals where you might have a little bit more time to allow them to come to these places on their own. So yeah, I love couples work. I really do. I don't even accept individual clients anymore. Maybe if it has to do with relationship issues, maybe they're just ending a relationship and getting into a new one and they want to sort of shore up some things before they get into this relationship. I might take an individual, but it's just not my bag of tricks.
Laura, often, like as we've discussed some questions we might sort of touch on and mm-hmm. something I've explored with other people I've interviewed, you know, that idea of what is fully functioning from an individual point of view and then what is maybe addictive behavior, what's problem behavior versus what's lifestyle choices. So, you know, typically, say, for instance, some clinicians can be accused sometimes of just pathologizing behavior. So someone who's, I don't know, has a certain lifestyle, they don't see it as a problem. So how do you frame fully functioning behavior versus what is problem behavior? I know with couples, it's probably self-evident because they're presenting with problems and in mm-hmm. crisis maybe.
Mm-hmm. Well, so I'll give a little bit of an example. I have a couple that I've been seeing and the female in the partnership has grown into what I would call a sort of an overfunctioning and an underfunctioner. So he has overfunctioned in the relationship to the point where she has become an underfunctioner. So she goes to bed at 3 o'clock in the morning. She wakes up at 11 o'clock in the afternoon and she has 3 children. And is this problematic behavior? It hasn't been seen as problematic from their point of view because it's become normalized. It's what they're doing all the time. But when you come in and you have a third party sort of shine a mirror back on them and say, how is this working for you? It's not working. Let's talk about what we can do. And the piece about couples work that I think is so fascinating is it's not about her having this bad behavior of sleeping in until 11 o'clock in the afternoon and going to bed at 3 and doing things, basically being a non-participant in a lot of ways in the relationship. It's a dynamic. It's the fact that her husband has taken on so much, it's made it very easy for her to underfunction. So as far as it goes with pathologizing that individual, I find it much more helpful to take a look at how the two of them as a dynamic have made that possible, has enabled for them to get into that dynamic. So I'm not sure if I answered your question, but...
Yeah, no, it did. Like that sort of codependency gets played out in the in their relationship. What if, you know, you have people who have alternative lifestyles, like maybe swinging, one of the couple might think it's okay, that there isn't the problem, it's the other person that has the problem. Yeah. So that lack of consensus in the relationship, how do you then address that?
So I have had this come up, which is interesting. Salt Lake and Seattle are both large swinging communities. So that just brought in sort of a plethora of past cases where one partner does have a little bit more of a desire for alternative sexual appetite. And her husband is a little bit more vanilla, as we would say. Mm. And so we talk about it openly where the desires come from and what she's wanting versus what he's wanting. And you're going to find that in any partnership, it doesn't matter whether or not it's an alternative lifestyle or it has a, you know, there's maybe a, I don't know, a stigma against it, that partners are going to have these differences. And that's the spice of life. That's sort of the fun piece. I have partners that often say, we're so different. If we're not compatible, is it just not worth it? And I have found so many ways where partners finally figure out that they're the beautiful puzzle pieces that fit together. That where one person may be lacking, the other person brings a strong, element into their life. I was a fun hater for a long time. And my husband, for instance, was just, he attacks life with all of his intensity. And with the two of us together, I have now become a lover of fun and adventure. And without him, I wouldn't have been able to do what I do now as far as getting out on the weekends and enjoying life. So I think that we need these differences, but it's really about managing the discomforts in the differences, because you're not always going to be able to find, it's not like this husband's going to wake up.
The full interview is available on YouTube. Just search for Noel Bell interview Laura Heck.